Hi, my name is Lowell, and you're listening to CJSF 90.1 FM, Simon Fraser Campus Radio.
Would you give me a beat?
CJSF 90.1 FM is the campus radio station for Simon Fraser University, located on Burnaby Mountain in BC, Canada. CJSF 90.1 FM, diverse, independent, yours. Check us out on SoundCloud or at cjsf.ca.
It is only through a change in human consciousness that the world will be transformed. The personal and the planetary are connected. As we expand our awareness of mind, body, psyche, and spirit, and bring that awareness actively into the world, so also will the world be changed. This is our quest as we explore new dimensions.
As we inevitably move into the second half of our lives, we will face the challenge of accepting the forces of limitation. Some of the limits will be imposed on us by our own bodies and not being able to do what we have always done. And there are no shortcuts as we apprenticeship aging. Even though the losses and limitations are real, so are the rewards and gifts, and today we'll explore the challenges and gifts of growing older with our guest, Mark Nepo. Mark Nepo is a poet, philosopher, and spiritual teacher who shares eloquently from a deep and authentic place. As a cancer survivor, Mark devotes his writings and teachings to the journey of inner transformation and the life of relationships. He's the author of dozens of books and audio learning courses, including You Don't Have to Do It Alone, The Power of Friendship, and The Fifth Season, Creativity in the Second Half of Life. So please join us for the next hour as we explore insights into growing older with our guest, Mark Nepo. I'm speaking with Mark at his home by remote connection. I'm Justine Willis-Toms. I'll be your host. Welcome to New Dimensions. Mark, welcome.
Oh, it's wonderful to be with you again.
Oh,
endless conversation together.
It's true. We've had many conversations through the years, haven't we? Absolutely. Yes. And I'd love to start, at least, you're now in your 70s, and you have been really exploring, what does it mean to age? And I'm wondering, what signifies the turning point when we start to realize we are aging? I mean, is it we begin to realize there's more life behind us than ahead of us? Or what is it that signifies that you've noticed from your friends and your research?
First, let me back up and say that, you know, as you know, I've always used my own life as a case study for the archetypal passages we all face. And so I am 74 now. And as I've crossed into the continent of aging, this is what's here. And I feel like, you know, that's when I needed to look more deeply at what we're all going through. And so for me, certainly if we don't stay engaged in the inner life, and in relationship with everything larger than us, then the physical limitations start to tell us we're aging. Then the looking back and the looking forward. But for me, what has been the deeper, and there's no one pinpoint, but the deeper passage into aging has been the depth with which I'm closer in my relationship with this mystery of life, this increasing sense paradox of being more myself and yet more at one with everything under, around, above, and in. And this is one of the central things. I think as we start to, after all these years, I one of the metaphors that, as you know from my poetry and my other books, these metaphors and these stories, they all become my teachers. I know they ring true, and then I have to unpack them. And so one of the early teachers in this journey was this metaphor for aging of a meteor, and how meteors, they come from, very few actually get to the surface through the atmosphere. So what happens is they start coming into the atmosphere, and as they hurtle toward Earth, more and more parts of the meteor flake off, and they get brighter and brighter till all that's left is light. And that came as a real teacher about, I think that's what aging over a lifetime is like, until all that's left is light. And of course, the flaking is all the limitations, and I'm doing really well now, but in September I had back surgery, and took a long time to recover, but I'm better than before the surgery. But that's part of the flaking off. And certainly, as in throughout our lives, other forms of friction of living and suffering, and wonder and joy reveal more of who we are through our soul into the world. And I think part of this shift in aging is, I think what I've been discovering is there are different skills required of us in the second half of life. And one, and this that seems so important, is not shifting from pain and limitation to whatever, to trying to rationalize it, to turn from it, to compensate for it. But over a lifetime, outwardly, we do flake off. We do start to erode, if you will, and all of that comes with it. But at the same time, we are deepening and expanding over a lifetime. And so one of the skills that I feel like we're being asked at this time of life is to stay open to that as much as we stay open to the limitations. Not to turn from it, not to try to get away from it, because in that wholeness, they somehow work together, and it helps the limitations not be the driver.
Mm.
They're real, they're there, we can't escape them. My back needed surgery, and it was long and hard to recover, and at the same time, it scoured me open yet again.
I'm thinking of an analogy that you are, or a story that you shared with us in this book, The Fifth Season. And it was the story of Odysseus, because what I loved about it was we might be tempted to return back to what it is that we have mastered before, like our what we've accomplished in our work or our job or whatever it was. And can you tell that story?
Sure.
I loved it.
This is a little known part at the end of the Odyssey. And actually, Helen Luke, wonderful Helen Luke, has a whole part of her book, Old Age, Journey to Simplicity, focuses on this myth itself. And I refer to that and try to unpack it more as I can. And so this wonderful story. So, of course, Odysseus, at the end of the, he's gone through the Trojan War. He's gone through the Odyssey. He's finally home. He was the master at sea. He was the living master at sea. And so he's home, everything's fine. He's thwarted all the suitors that were trying to marry Penelope while he was away. And he's basically retired, and he's bored, and he's restless. And so he decides he's going to go back to sea. And he takes his oar, packs a backpack, leaves a note for Penelope. But on the way to the harbor, Tiresias, the blind soothsayer, hovers above him as a spirit and says, no, you're going back for the wrong reasons. You will turn around and walk inland until you meet someone who not only doesn't know what the sea is, they don't even know what an oar is. And then you will plant the oar and start a garden. So this is a powerful ancient story. So what is it offering us? You know, and I think what it says to me is he was going back. We never let go of all we've learned, but he was going back for the respect, for the position, for the already set place he had in the world. And we're continually asked, especially in old age, to keep growing. So he was to take everything that he learned, but go in a different direction. And so this opens up this amazing, you know, we know in Eastern tradition, they talk about beginner's mind, but I would add beginner's heart. And so as I've reflected on this, what it's opened up for me is this archetypal passage that we all go through, not just in old age, but throughout our lives, of exploration, mastery, and abandonment. Mm-hmm. Not emotional abandonment in relationship, but, you know, exploration. We're never as alive as when we're learning. That's the beginner's mind, the beginner's heart. And mastery, as you know, from your own mastery, is a long, subtle, beautiful intimacy with the thing that calls us and the thing we love. And then comes abandonment. Not abandonment of what we've learned, not abandonment, but how do we take all of that and have fresh eyes and fresh ears and a fresh heart and take it further? So a question I have for anyone who's approaching the second half of life is, where are you in this journey? Are you clinging to the position of mastery? Is anything calling you to rekindle your beginner's mind and beginner's heart? Stay in conversation with it. Journal about it. You won't lose a lifetime's learning and a lifetime's worth. We don't need the external kind of accoutrements of mastery. We just need how it has mastered our soul.
And to tune in, I would imagine, to the confidence we had when we became a master of something, and to call that up, to call up the confidence rather than the actual skill, and to assign that to where we are now.
Yeah, and another kind of metaphor, water metaphor, is it's like, you know, water in a glass. The water is the confidence. The water is our earned worth and connection and authenticity. And it can fill any shaped glass. We get so used to the shaped glass, which is our identity over this long mastery, that we fear if we don't have the glass, well, what are we? Well, no, the mystery of spirit is that water won't go anywhere. And it will fill any shaped glass.
Exactly, exactly. I want to remind our listeners, I'm here with Mark Nepo, spiritual teacher and philosopher and poet, and the author of The Fifth Season. And if you want to know more about his work, you can go to his website, marknepo.com. And he spells his last name N-E-P-O, marknepo.com. Or you can get there through the New Dimensions website, newdimensions.org. I'm Justine Willis-Toms. You're listening to New Dimensions. You use a phrase called befriending life. Befriending life. What do you mean? What is befriending life? What do you mean by that?
Well, I think what I mean by that is that there's a different way we show up when we befriend anything, which is different than comprehending or understanding or conceptualizing. So, of course, our practice ground for befriending is with each other. That's the most common. Then perhaps with ourselves, but it's actually a model of a practice. How do we befriend everything larger than us? How do we befriend the unknown? How do we befriend life itself? How do we befriend time?
How do we befriend that which is difficult?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And so what befriending opens is we bring everything to it. We show, you know, if we're friends, I don't conceptualize you. I love you. If you call up, I come over. So how do we take that learning and show up wholeheartedly, authentically, holding nothing back, which is even more important as we age? And so because that, I feel like, you know, I'm learning myself, you know, on the other side of this back surgery, which was a major surgery. I'm very conscious of, now that I'm well, I'm not back. There is no back.
You're different.
I'm different, and I'm learning what the new normal is. So we don't have to pathologize changes as we age. You know, one of the things that is, in my 30s, I almost died from a rare form of lymphoma. And I realize now in my 70s, you know, for much of the years in between, because of that trauma, I had a very extreme approach to wellness and illness. It's like, if everything was okay, I'm well. If anything felt different, uh-oh. And of course, as I've gotten into, you know, in my 60s and now 70s, you know, often there's nothing wrong. We're just like old trees creaking. And I can't continue to have that black and white urgent approach because it's not helpful and it's not accurate. You know, like I have to just honor each sensation as it comes. And so I am on the other side of this surgery. I am adjusting and learning what is the new normal, you know? So, you know, I need in the afternoon, I need a little nap now that I never needed before. And so we can bemoan that it's a falling off if we're not opening up ourselves to that breath and depth and the more light that's coming through. Everything in life changes, and they're all not pathologized. They're all not deficiencies. That actually distracts us. That doesn't mean we don't feel it. Yes, do I wish when I needed a nap that I could keep going?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, that's not the point. Then I'm not here. And this brings us into the true, I think, purpose of memory and going into the past. So nostalgia is when I feel that there's something in the past that I remember that was wonderful, I was alive, and I want to go back to that to see if I can recapture it. That's nostalgia. I think the true purpose of memory is that appearance of that life force is still alive in me. And if I go back to recognize it, so that I can find where it is in me now, that's the true purpose of recollection, of going back to see how it has shifted and where is it showing up in us now. It'll never be the way it was 30 years ago or 20 years ago or even 10 years ago, but this is where, if we stay open, I have found, to that how the inner life is still coming through us and growing and deepening, it gives us access to better understand because the current of spirit never stops. It's like our bodies over time become different instruments that it plays through. And so I can get lost in that I'm not the same instrument I was 20 years ago or 30 years ago, But that just distracts me from discovering what the instrument looks like now.
What are some questions we can ask ourselves when we look back and there was a moment and there was a learning that we got, but what questions can we ask ourselves to apply it now at this point in our life?
Well, so one of the questions for me that's helpful is, when I say all this, I'm not suggesting we will do this because we're human, but we don't have to stay there. And that's the work of self-awareness. So, you know, if I go back to a time where I felt particularly vital and alive, well, I need to ask myself, what was I feeling inside, and where was it in me then? Not attach it to the circumstance or the people or the surrounding, because that is, you can't recapture that. So if I can go back and say, what did that feel like? And then the question, the key question is, where is that feeling in and energy in me now? How can I recognize it and come back to my life now and say, where is it in me now? And how can I now start to be in relationship with it?
As you say that, I'm reminded of a time in my life when I was jumping horses. And there was an instructor. We were at a workshop. And so I took a series of fences with my horse. And I did it really, really well. I it was right in rhythm, every step. It was just a motion that was just elegant and beautiful and well done. And so I remember the instructor said, okay, Justine, now do it again. And it just panicked me because I didn't have the confidence. I thought, oh, that was an accident. It just sort of happened. And he asked me to do it again. And I remember that because it really applies to what you're saying.
Yeah.
That I did do that second round of fences, and I did it really well. And that's the memory that I need to go back to, that to have the confidence, oh, yes, I can do this.
Yeah, and Justine, I think this is a thank you. That's a great example of what I'm trying to convey here is that, and so very often where we learn important things is not where we practice them later in life. So you're learning that elegant rhythm, you have brought that into how you're a master interviewer.
Mm-hmm.
You learned it with horses, but this is where that mastery lives in you now. And this is what I mean is, like, we learn these things and we kind of romanticize the just like Odysseus wanting to go back to sea. And we kind of romanticize the hardened silhouette of where they first came to us. But really, where is it that, you know, so I know I grew up on the sea where my father, not literally, but, you know, my father had a sailboat that he built, a 30-foot catch. I spent so much of my youth there. And I think that a lot of how I learned to be in rhythm with the sea helped me learn about the rhythm with everything larger than us.
You know, Mark, what I get from what you are saying and what the example I gave is that it's a somatic thing. It's like lives in the cells of our body. It's not an intellectual thing. We can trust that.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And so, you know, that is, which I've always felt is, you know, the mind is such an amazing tool to be applied with our other intelligences, especially the heart intelligence, the somatic intelligence. So, and I think this is the work of self-awareness, which I think we have to, just the way we try to exercise, especially as we get older, to have core strength. Well, we need to exercise our self-awareness and our heart, you know. Often this kind of thing we're talking about, I'm often asked in these intimate circles that I love to be in with people when I'm able to teach, and often, you know, a question at the end of a weekend or a week or a year in the year-long groups is, you know, folks will say, well, what about when I leave the circle? Mm-hmm. And the same thing, I say, what you came in with and what we've loved into the open is in you. Go in to where that lives and feel it and know it, so that when you go out of this circle, you can welcome it into your life. You can welcome that into your life outside of this circle, or like outside of the past.
Right. Part of this, too, is I know that you encourage us to stay in curiosity and to call up just that quality of being amazed at life itself. Just even in our limitations, and even if we're hobbling around with a walker, you know, or whatever it is, you know, or that our eyesight is not what it used to be, whatever it is, that there's still a place for amazement.
Well, and I think that this does raise the paradox of limitation. And this is not to sugarcoat limitation. Nobody likes them. You know, I had to cancel 8 months of teaching, and I had to, you know, and I couldn't do anything. I couldn't put on socks. I couldn't shower by myself. I was in chronic pain for the first time in my life. And it only made the wonder more present. You know, it only made the wonder and the amazement just all around. You know, I never, you know, my study where I am now is on our second floor. And, you know, for months it took me 20 minutes to a half hour to get up here. I had to take each step, wait a step at a time, and wait for the pain to subside. And then when, you know, I was finally able to come up here again without pain, I realized that there were 14 steps on these stairs. I never knew that. I never realized that how they had held me up for decades in this house. And I was getting a treat for our dog Zuzu, and I dropped it. And all of a sudden, I went down on one knee and I kissed the step. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, this reminds me of a wonderful, poignant story that you tell in your writings. And this was a friend. I think his name was Ernie. Can you tell that story? I love that story.
Yeah, Ernie was a wonderful man, and his two dogs. And so he was struggling with cancer and a brain tumor, and he was walking his dogs as he did every day, and they came upstairs, and the older dog would have to wait and go slower, and so the younger dog would sit on a few steps ahead and wait. And that's how they, all three of them, Ernie would have to wait, and then the younger dog would wait for both Ernie. And this was really what he termed the grace of diminishment. And what it raises, of course, is, which affects our whole life, but we often, unless we're thrown into something or through the gradual relationship with diminishment, we don't realize that there's nowhere to go. Where are we going? Where else? Heaven is right there on those steps. Heaven is right here, you know? And sure, we go places, that's fine, we do things. But life is really a journey from in to out, not from here to there. And this is what the paradox of limitation, and again, I'm not advocating limitation. I'm just saying this is what it is, and how do we face it? And yes, it hurts. We don't like it. That's real. And what is it opening us to, right, in that exploration, mastery, and abandonment? And a great example is Claude Monet. Monet was devoted his lifetime to painting what he saw. He had incredible eyesight and was trying, as we know, to paint light.